morning. My name is Thomas Verbenslich. I'm an American living in Hong Kong and Berlin, and the title of my talk is Shockwaves and High Temperatures. And by what I mean here is that the temperatures I'm going to be referring to are the temperatures within the shockwave itself. Introduction. Since the 1940s, physicists have thought shock waves heat gases to temperatures 1,000 to 10,000 Kelvin. The high temperatures could not be confirmed because sensors could not be placed inside the thin shock thickness. And instead, temperatures were inferred from spectroscopic analysis of the radiation emitted, assuming the molecules were thermally excited. Today, nothing really has changed. Spectroscopy measurements are now claimed to infer temperatures from 700 to 1200 degrees Kelvin with an accuracy of 6 degrees Kelvin from the vibrational states of the CO2 molecule at 4.2 micron. Now, the background. In a fast disturbance, gas molecules are compressed to nanoscale shockless thicknesses less than 100 nanometers. Here I show a classical picture. Here is the state of gases coming in, pressure, temperature, and density in state 1, and then state 2 properties coming out, and some of the shock thickness D here. Now, based on classical physics, shockwave compression produces high pressure, resulting in a sharp rise in temperature. In 1960, going back a few years, at Carnegie Tech, we derived this equation, and most of you have done the same, especially the younger people. And here's the initial temperature, and this expression is given here. M here is the Mach number, gamma is the specific heat ratio, C sub T over C sub V. And at that time, we were not asked what happens if the heat capacity vanishes. But I think if you look at this relationship, as C vanishes, the ratio of specific heat to specific heat by volume, this should converge to 1. And if you put 1 into these, gamma equal 1 into these relationships, what you find is the temperature is equal to T1. It's an isothermal process. This is what we were taught, that it was an isothermal process if gamma is equal to 1. But you could look at this another way. It's really the specific heat ratio as C vanishes. However, at that time we were not asked what is the shock thickness. Now, the shock thickness, classically, the thickness of a shock wave is now thought to distribute density and pressure by fluid viscosity. This is a sketch out of Granger that shows the shock in 1985. Here you see an element, here's the shock. This is the pressure is coming in, this is the velocity coming in, V1, and the pressure coming out, the velocity coming out. We know that the shear stress here is equal to mu dV/dx. This is from fluid mechanics. We all know this is correct. The momentum, again, the pressure difference is equal to rho V1 squared. And if you assume the shear stress is equal to P1 minus P2, that is somewhat questionable, but if you make that assumption, you can simplify these equations and come up with the shock thickness dx equal to mu over rho times divided by the velocity of the fluid coming in. And here, velocity V1 is the Mach number at 1 times the sonic velocity at 1. And S1 here is gamma RT, the square root of that. Now, if you take this classical relationship and you plot this versus Mach number, here's the shock wave thickness in degrees Kelvin. And here is the shock wave thickness and thickness in nanometers. Now the yellow curve is the temperature, and the blue curve is the shock wave thickness. Now for an ideal monatomic gas at 300 degrees Kelvin coming in, having specific ratio 7 over 5, the shock wave temperature at Mach 10 is 6500 degrees Kelvin. Here's the Mach number, here's Mach 10, and you come over to, and you get around 6500 Kelvin. And for air at Mach 10, the shock wave thickness turns out to be around 6 nanometers. You can see that here. Here is Mach 10. Of course, you can't resolve the 6 nanometers on this plot, but that's pretty much what it is. The problem. QM, and not classical physics, governs the temperatures produced in the nanoscale shock thickness. Here, QM I'll be referring to as quantum mechanics. And in fact, quantum mechanics given by the Planck law precludes any temperature increase. Forget about 10,000 degrees Kelvin. No temperature is allowed because the heat capacity of the atom vanishes through the shock thickness. And therefore, the high shock temperatures based on thermodynamics calculations or inferred from spectroscopic analysis really have no meaning. And the quantum mechanical interpretation: the compression of molecules and shock waves does not increase the gas temperature. And what I mean here, the gas temperature in the shock. And instead, you're going to induce the emission of electromagnetic radiation. And I tend to show that here. Here's the, again, the classical picture, as I pointed out before. But I show this QED radiation coming off this shock. And there I show a standing wave in here, lambda over 2, half wavelength equal to the thickness d. Now here, when I talk about QED, I want to make it clear that this is a simplified of the quantum electrodynamics proposed by Feynman and others. EM here is electromagnetic. And what this means is that this radiation coming off will ionize the gases, and you get a moving front of charge, and that will allow microwave emission to occur. Now the simple QED model, heat capacity, electromagnetic confinement, and QED emission. The QED model, at the nanoscale, QED converts the heat Q into EM radiation because quantum mechanics precludes conservation by an increase in temperature. Now, QED here, as I pointed out earlier, is a simple form of the complex light and matter interaction advanced by Feynman and others. And basically, all that is being stated here is that heat goes into a quantum mechanical box and produces QED radiation directly. Here I show a cubical block side D, heat coming in, Q. And now we know from nanotechnology that the heat will go into the surface, not into the volume, because of the high surface to volume ratio of nano objects. Okay, by quantum mechanics, the temperature cannot increase, and therefore, the only way you can conserve that energy is to produce radiation inside. Here I show half wavelength, lambda over 2, fitting in the box. And of course, once you use up the radiation and the energy in the surface, the confinement is no longer there, and the radiation comes off. And the equations are simple. Here the frequency is of the radiation is the velocity of light c divided by n, the refractive index of the material, divided by the wavelength, and I just showed you lambda over 2 should be equal to d. And here the Planck energy of that radiation is Planck's constant h times the frequency f. Now the heat capacity of the atom. Planck energy of the atom is shown here in electron volts. And on the abscissa, you see the thermal wavelength. And you can see this goes off to the macro scale. Out here beyond 1,000 microns to the nanoscale below 1 micron. And on the right, you see the KT energy of the atom at room temperature, 0258 electron volts. Now, this blue line going all the way across is classical physics. When you do classical physics, molecular dynamics, COMSOL, ANSYS, Abacus, this is the assumption you make. The heat capacity is constant, depending only on KT. However, with quantum mechanics, it's a different picture. This is the Planck law, as you see here, most of you know this. If you plot this out at 300 degrees Kelvin, you get this yellow curve coming down. And you could argue down to maybe 100 microns or so in this region. The classical physics and quantum mechanics give about the same heat capacity to the atom. However, below that, the quantum mechanical heat capacity vanishes at the nanoscale. And from this plot, you can kind of see the history of the clash between classical physics and quantum mechanics. In 1900, Planck derived the Planck law, as you see here. In 1912, Debye came along with his phonon, and he basically assumed that H nu is equal to KT. And from this plot, you can see this is valid for lambda greater than 100 microns, out in here. Perfectly valid. But today, phonons are used in nanostructures way over here. There's an apparent problem. And in 1950, Teller and Metropoulos did an MD simulation. They used periodic boundary conditions. And again, this is valid for lambda greater than 100 microns. So what they were working with is out in here. Perfectly valid. However, today, MD is used in discrete nanostructures way over here. So there's another problem. So the question here is, how do nanostructures provide this high electromagnetic confinement? You have to confine the atom to short wavelengths. How is this done? What is the mechanism? In one talk I was told there's no helmet around each atom, which is of course true. But what is the mechanism? How does this occur? We know that nanoshocks have high surface to volume ratios. Like any nano object, the surface to volume ratio is very high at the nanoscale. And the compressive work that you produce in those compressing the gases produces heat. And this in turn, by itself, spontaneously creates the confinement. But again, as I just pointed out, quantum mechanics precludes any temperature increase. So QED then conserves that confined energy by producing electromagnetic radiation. Again, here's the shock thickness, the initial properties coming in. Temperature goes up, the energy is placed into the surface, but there's no temperature increase by quantum mechanics. It's still there. You have to conserve it. And what is being proposed is you're producing radiation, which I call QED radiation, with a half wavelength equal to the thickness of the shock. And again, once that energy is used up, there's no longer any confinement, and the radiation comes off. So the confinement requires, that I'm talking about, require high surface to volume ratios. It doesn't work for macroscopic objects. So the QED emission, again, I'm plotting here the emission wavelength lambda in nanometers. Here's the extreme ultraviolet, visible, and infrared. And on the abscissa is the shock thickness in nanometers from 1 to 100. And yellow here is air, and here I show in blue is the zinc oxide, which is not a shock, but it's here for comparison. And if you take air with a 10 nanometer shock, it will emit EUV at 20 nanometers. Here you can see that. Here's 10 nanometers. We come over, it's around 20 nanometers. And for the zinc oxide coating, 50 nanometers, if you come over here and come up, you can produce UVC radiation at 254 nanometers, which is excellent for disinfection. Now, the quantum mechanical summary. Unlike classical physics, quantum mechanics suggests the work of compressing the gas to the nanoscale shock thickness is conserved by QED induced. Again, this is non-thermal radiation. The radiation comes off as non-thermal, but as it goes out and is absorbed by the vessel or the container, that energy will increase the temperature. So when you look at the inside, you're going to find high temperatures, but they're not caused by high temperatures in the shock. So the electromagnetic confinement is naturally caused by the high surface to volume ratio. You don't need a steel helmet around each atom. And since the temperatures cannot increase, the simple QED conserves that surface heat by creating standing waves having half wavelength equal to the shock thickness. And once the surface heat is expended in creating those standing waves, the balancing electromagnetic confinement is lost and the radiation is emitted. Again, these are the equations. And QED induces then non-thermal electromagnetic radiation, thereby exciting the molecular vibration states without high temperature. And the clock shock thickness, D, may be inferred by measuring the frequency of the QED emission, as you see here. And the important thing here is by quantum mechanics, the shock thickness is totally independent of viscosity. The applications, there are many, and I'm not have time to go through each of these, but they're on my home page. You can take a look at them. However, there is one that I would like to briefly talk about, and that's critical shock diameter, which I was exposed to a few days ago. Now, this critical shock diameter, the shock waves propagating in a conical tube fail to detonate if the diameter is less than a critical diameter D. And this is taken from Soren's paper, was presented on Tuesday at this conference. And by quantum mechanics, the QED radiation produces the ionization front, as you see here. And since it's moving, it produces microwaves at a wavelength of twice the refractive index times the diameter. So the detonation then fails as energy of propagation is lost to the surroundings at microwave frequency F. So if you measure the microwave frequency, as you see here, you can determine the shock thickness D. So I'd like to kind of conclude here with what I call nanostructure temperature. To illustrate the point of the heat capacity of the atom vanishing, if you add carbon nanoparticles to a molten aluminum in air, as in an oxygen environment, and you cool to ambient, and you take SEM micrographs, this is what you'll see. The gray here is the aluminum, and the black are the carbon nanoparticles. Well, the carbon nanoparticles do not combust at 600 degrees C. That's what you should walk away with, but they should have. So if you repeat this for micron-sized carbon, what you're going to find, you won't find any carbon nanoparticles in the SEM. This suggests complete nanoparticle combustion. So the interpretation here, I think you can see, is that the nanoparticles do not have heat capacity. And macrocarbon increases in temperature, and as it does, the carbon gets smaller and smaller and approaches the nanoparticle size, but combustion will reduce the nanoparticles will stay at high temperature, and they will also combust. And what this means is temperature changes do not occur in nanostructures. This is the argument I'd like to make, and that's because of the vanishing heat capacity. The conclusions: QED conserves heat by emitting electromagnetic radiation, but only in nanostructures with high surface-to-volume ratio. It doesn't work at the macro scale. In long-wave electromagnetic confinement in macro scale, phonons, periodic boundary conditions in MD and so forth, the heat is indeed conserved by increasing temperature. Well, that's all I have. If you have any questions and papers, this is my email address and homepage. Take a look at it, and you'll get an idea of what I've been trying to show you. Thank you very much.